If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, Jaya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We will be doing an overview of the Tate charges because it's a subtle issue. You know, Richard Spencer was just replying to me on Twitter saying, because I said, you know, there's a problem with statutory windows. So there's a problem with women coming at you 10 years later. That's an issue. And it's an issue in this case. Now, Richard says, well, the case was 10 years old. The case was 10 years old for some of the claims, but they pile on and they pile on. And some other women see, oh, these women are piling on. I'm going to pile on too. It's a social mess. And we're going to talk about it because I don't think necessarily that everything is false about the Tates. Maybe they've committed some illegal act. And we'll try to distinguish between illegal act, revocation of consent post-event and regret, and women just ganging on men because they become too powerful, too rich, and they become jealous. All of this plays here. And my final answer is not the Tates are absolutely innocent on everything, but when I see a social phenomenon that grifts itself to justice, I think this is criticizable on its own, independent of the facts. There's a point at which we have to say, look, if you don't go to see a police after your rape, or at least within like 1 year after your rape, then it's not a rape. Then you've spent enough time accepting it that you've consented, basically. You've consented for the whole year that you stayed silent. We used to have this in statutory limits on rape, which were much tighter before. But liberals and feminists have been pushing extremely hard on this one. You will remember hearing experts and liberals talking on talk shows for years, for decades they've been doing it. And they say, you know, these women are intimidated sometimes. Sometimes they need to see other women to get the courage to speak out. And this is the whole principle under the Me Too stuff. They know that they can coach women. And that's another problem, which is we never get to know in this piling that happens. We never get to know how much money is there in the background. How much are these NGOs sending to the brother of that girl, to the mother of that other girl? You'll never know this. The money trace is not kept. And you'll never even be able to ask, because in a lot of these liberal jurisdictions, certainly in the UK, you have this whole anonymity guarantee for the witnesses. So when it's a sexual crime, the witness can retain anonymity, but then there's no accountability. You barely get to ask them anything. You barely get to challenge them in front of the jury. It's a big mess. It's a big mess that have been achieved by the feminists. They have created a system in which justice doesn't have to be accountable when it comes to sexual assault or assault during sex. And Seminatory Supremacy says it's like if you could eat the whole plate at a restaurant and still ask for a refund because you didn't like the food. Exactly. The Ape Man says, JF, the zebra fish has the capacity of regenerating its entire brain from as little as 20% remaining healthy brain tissue. You can't tell me that we shouldn't insert this into the human genome. We shouldn't. I don't think we should modify our evolutionary pathways. You don't even know the trade-offs you're playing with, bro. You're going to introduce regeneration. Now, what does that do to your cognition when you're a teenager? You don't control the genes. You just put it in there. And for the fish, for the zebra fish, it was repairing its tail pretty good. Now you've put it in a human. Now your teenagers are suddenly doing crazy stuff. They are cognitively modified and you don't even know the direction. Now they regrow parts of their brain across their life and you don't even realize this until the end of their life. But then you think back and you're like, oh shit, their behavior was fucked up also. You don't know what you're causing in terms of mental disorders. The human genome is not ready to take in the regeneration codes that come from a fish we've been separated from for 500 million years or more. So no. People think they have the right argument for genetic modification. Oh, Jeff, you wouldn't object to people repairing themselves? Yes, I object. I object. And think about, anyways, even if you were to do it perfectly and you understand everything about life and genes, think about how it would change your view of life. The fact that you can literally chop your arm and it will regrow. Think about the society it creates. I prefer cherishing life. I prefer life being this fragile, honestly. I wouldn't choose away from it. I prefer people going into adulthood and being told by their parents, your brain is extremely important. So no, don't go out there and smoke meth or whatever. You're going to ruin your life and it's going to be ruined forever. We should be hanging to life in this cherished way. But you wouldn't if you could repair everything with a pre-edited gene modification. Plapidus says, JF, in Tate's Jack Neil interview, he implies that Charlie Kirk was killed because he said things he wasn't supposed to. Do you still believe that Tyler acted alone? Well, to say I still believe is a misframing, kind of, because I've always been clear that I believe that Tyler Robinson, up to now, seems to have taken the shot. So I believe that it was like the story, like the official story. Tyler Robinson had a gun and he shot Charlie Kirk. That I believe. But I've never said that I was certain that he acted alone. And in fact, I've always been encouraging heavily on what led to this and what is the environment of Tyler Robinson? Who were the players? Were there people pushing him toward it? Were there people ordering this? I've always been clear that I believe it is certainly a possibility, not even a rare possibility, but more like I'm on the fence on was there external involvement. There is definitely not definitive proof of that for now. But not having definitive proof is very different from it's not existing. So that's still my current position. And unfortunately, something tells me we're never really going to get a clear investigation of all this. Let's have a look before we get into the big subject at some of the minor news. Clavicular has been separating from his girlfriend, or at least announcing that he was splitting. And I really like what Clavicular is invoking here.
You just make me look bad all the time.
How? You're just making me look bad all the time.
You don't look bad.
No, because like you do stupid stuff and then I get mad, rightfully so, and then it just gets clipped on TikTok. Of me getting mad when I show.
If you're right for being mad, then it's right.
So women don't understand this, and this I'm so happy that Clavicular here is putting his feet on the ground. Woman, the way you behave around your husband and boyfriends is extremely important because we live in a extremely male oppressive society. And whatever you let transpire from your attitude around your husband, people will use this to develop paranoias. So, for example, don't act like a fucking beat up woman when you're not beat up. Like, I've seen it again and again. Woman happy in the relationship, there's no violence, no verbal abuse. But you get in front of a police or a doctor or a nurse, and suddenly they're beside you and they're like, I don't want to answer this question. I don't think we can talk about this. It's like, what the fuck, woman? Why do you do this? You make us look bad. You create this whole impression that the couple is unstable or that there's something hidden, or you act in secrecy, and then people start thinking, wow, he must be beating her. Stop doing this, you fucking psychos. Stop doing this. And this is exactly, well, not exactly, but this is what is happening in the clavicular relationship. So she's doing some insane stuff on TikTok while clavicular is just trying to work, and she's being stupid. Now clavicular, what does he have to do? Well, the same thing I had to do with Mama JF for fucking 5 years. Mama JF, please get out of the camera. No, please don't say these things, Mama JF. Mama JF, don't come here drunk in front of the camera. And then people say, oh, wow, JF pushed Mama JF. I'm just trying to save her from herself. And it's like, no, Mama, no, please don't do a psychotic crisis on the internet. Not a good idea. Not good for you. And then people are, wow, JF is controlling his woman. Well, it's like, yeah, at some point, from just a strict engineering perspective, there is a point at which women are self-hurting so much that you kind of have to protect them from themselves. And this is the situation that clavicular found himself in. So what do I do if I keep having basically a terrorist in my house that is trying actively, or at least acting like she's an optimized being, to do exactly this, which is to ruin my life and reputation? Why? And why does she want to do it on camera? And why does she want to alarm the whole internet about things that aren't even true? Like the fucking paranoia around No White Guilt. Oh, he tried to kill me. Now people on the internet are clipping this and saying, first, they have many layers of misunderstanding. So first they say, oh, well, she just said that JF tried to kill her. Well, no, she was not talking to me. She was talking to No White Guilt. And then it's like, No White Guilt didn't try to kill her. She was just delusional. So it's like there's so many layers where you have to explain to people, no. Women are retarded, yes. And it's like, yeah, we do have to create some shield around them just for their own good. So Eric Clavicular is tired. He's trying to be a professional. She's messing with his stream. Doing the jester, this new term, by the way, jester maxing. So I'm not sure exactly what it is. From my understanding, jester maxing is kind of saying nothing on camera, but trying to be spectacular with some movements and trying to basically just mess with the internet, but you're not clever enough to discuss, so you just jester. You do some jester stuff.
Oh, no, you ruin my reputation.
No.
Yeah, you do.
So, no, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
You're fine.
No.
How?
No.
You have been demoted, woman! Papa JF's in-studio bed is waiting for you. As long as Francesca cannot fly, I can still welcome this woman, maybe for a week or two. You have been demoted. You must go to the next mugger.
Kidding me? No, I don't.
I like you as a person, but what? I think we should just be...
Are you kidding me?
Why do you care if we're just friends?
Because I love you.
So she's bringing in friends, creating mess, making him look bad. That's what all women do, by the way. They will do it at the microscopic level. They will do it when you go to the elementary school with them to follow the progress of your child. And they're going to send some alarm signals and red flags to by communicating like kind of telepathically with the socialist professors. Mel Mehta says, Jeff, what do I need to do to achieve high-functioning autistic offspring? First task, be autistic. Second task, inseminate woman.
Okay. Well, I gotta prioritize my career.
That's fine. And I'm here to support you.
No, you just make me look too bad.
Every step of the way, like, yes.
I'm here to support you. But you have to understand the world from a theory of mind perspective, woman. I'm talking to all women here. You have to realize you are a bubble of trouble. You are creating issues. You are broadcasting things that you don't... I mean, you probably realize what you're doing. You probably do it intentionally. But at the very best interpretation, you're broadcasting false signals for the purpose of attention-seeking, chaos inducement, and vengeance. So I'm absolutely certain that the days where Clavicular was a little less emotionally open to her, that she was creating more issues, more gesture maxing, more broadcasting of false signals. The broadcasting of false signals in the relationship is a subject that is absolutely uncovered by current couple therapy, by the way, or couple psychology. You'll never hear about this, but they do this all the time. There are movies about this. Like, look at American Beauty and notice that in American Beauty, the soldier neighbor guy, the military guy, the closeted gay guy of American Beauty is never beating his wife. And yet, she is the beaten wife of this guy in the movie. So the whole movie shows you nothing that he would be doing to his wife that would make her act like a fucking victim of constant abuse. And yet she acts like a victim of constant abuse. That is the nature of females, false broadcasters, which is why they can't do good podcasts, really. Because to do a good podcast, you need to talk about something that's true. Marby Dog says, inseminate that bubble of trouble on the double. Okay, now a sad story that is in development, which is the disappearance of Parker. He disappeared on the 16th in Calgary, in Alberta, I believe. So the Calgary Fire Department, the police is looking for him. He's an autistic guy who I kind of like the guy. He wears a Minecraft t-shirt. He has these headphones that kind of make him look like me. He has these headphones on his ears, but apparently it's to like cut the noise or whatever. So apparently he was 14 years old or something like this. And Parker, 11. Okay, so he's 11. And he's been apparently following this trace. They have seen him on cameras at maybe between 1 to 18 spots here. He's been walking around there, seems to have rotated here, and then was last seen here in some place of Calgary. And I look at this, and it's like, wow, this guy, this autistic young boy, just gets out of his house, follows a very straight path, very intentional, you know? Very straight path to go to what appears to me to be a destination. And then he turns around, apparently looking for something. To me, you know, you have to learn in science to see intentionality where you don't have much data. And I see here in the parkour used by Parker, I see some degree of intentionality here. This is not a guy wandering around. Notice the extent to which he straight walked to a destination, and then at that destination started walking around the local neighborhood, apparently searching for something. That tells me we are possibly, it's an hypothesis for now, but I find it relatively likely, we are possibly talking about a meetup here, an intentional meetup. I'm starting to believe that Parker was told on the internet to go there. He circled around. Did he end up in one of the houses that's in there, or did he end up in a van or a car of a man or a boy that was there? In any case, when I look at this trajectory, and I love to analyze movement maps, I see directedness, intentionality, and then search. I see two movements here. Parker wanted probably to go exactly there. And then Parker probably was searching for something or someone. That would be my tentative hypothesis here. I do hope that the police have the investigative tools to know about the signaling systems that young people can have access to if they have phones, if they have computers, Minecraft servers, Discord, end-to-end encryption, transfers toward private chat rooms, Signal, WhatsApp, and all of the more, the even more end-to-end encrypted and secretive stuff. I hope that everything is being looked at here. Because my suspicion, there's, you can combine the analysis of the intentionality of the path here with the series of facts that are known. So we know that Parker was seen again and again on cameras, but then disappeared. So this is a guy walking to a place. He's 11, autistic. He's sound sensitive, so he's carrying his headphone protection. He's going straight to that place and then wandering around looking for something specific, and then he disappears. That looks to me like either Parker entering an apartment and still being in it as of today, five days later, or him finding a car and then getting out of there. So what I would do if I was the police, I would do an absolute complete perimeter review of every car that enters and exits this rectangle right here. Any car that would have been hanging out, that would have been positioned for a long time, that would have waited for him. That would be my approach to investigation. I'm merely sharing these issues here to help this case and to provide my own opinion on it. I do hope that he is found. is it a backrooms related thing, says DK Shadow? He's in the backrooms. Well, what is this thing with the backrooms? I tried watching the movie. I wasn't able to watch more than 30 minutes of it. I have no clue what this movie is about. Now let's talk about the Tate charges. So the Tate brothers have been arrested. They have been arrested in Miami. Spectacular series of events have actually followed the arrest in that Andrew Tate released essentially a pre-taped interview that apparently was that was extremely accurate in basically predicting what was going to happen. And where it seems that effectively, so I was originally saying maybe you shouldn't have gone to the U.S. You know, that there was a massive risk that you would get extradited. But it seems from the interview that it's more like Andrew Tate chose. He chose to go into the U.S. to, for what he calls at the very end of the interview, force a decision. And by force a decision, he meant either that they would kill him or that they would arrest him and perhaps even kill him then on a plane or kill him in the jail cell. So that is that was this kind of dead man switch. That was a very enjoyable interview. And we need to talk about what is wrong about the Tates, what is right. I have a nuance I have a nuanced position. But generally, I am against the social mobs operating the justice system. That's my first alarm here. That's my most important thing. I am against social mobs being the wheel drive of justice. And holy shit, do women love to form social mobs, to pile up. And let us not forget, one of the big principles of science that guides me is that 150 bad measures doesn't improve the result. You know, there are weak measures that are weak in the sense that maybe they will lack the accuracy, and instead of being 100% right, they will be 99% right. You have scientific tools that are that precise. You have scientific tools that are 0.001 precision levels. Those are the kind of measures that if you make a lot of them, it will converge towards something better. But when you are working with a fundamental measure that is 2% accurate, that is, you're wrong 98% of the time. When you work with these measures, doing 150 of them doesn't improve. And if on top of it, the repeated use of these measures actually creates a phenomenon of entertainment, of self-referential feedback loops. Like if I say, hey, I'm giving you a ruler, but every time you measure with that ruler, the ruler just randomly expands. Now, the more you would measure with that ruler, the more it would expand and the less good it would become. That is what we're doing when we're doing these woman piling activities. And unfortunately, the justice system very often, especially in the case of sex crimes, doesn't care about showing, is that true? Is that woman? Does that woman bring physical evidence that what she's saying is true? The justice system very often skips above all of this and says, well, if there's 15 of them saying the same story, that's a pattern. It's a pattern of behavior. And this is the dirtiest thing. This idea that the pattern reinforces the fact. The pattern doesn't, because the pattern is a self-entraining, self-regenerating feedback loop. The more women come out, the more other women are looking at this and saying, oh, I couldn't make a story like this. Now, they haven't come up with these stories to the police 10 years ago. They have come up, some of them, many of them that are now piling on, have come up in recent years after the rise of popularity of Andrew Tate. So at some point as a society, we have to ask, is it really in our advantage to suppose that we have that many rapists, suppose that all these women are correct? Do we really want a society that encourages letting these rapists out constantly for 10 years until they become politicians, and then we put them in jail? It's not a very good rapist handling strategy from an engineering perspective. It's not very smart. What would be smart is to incentivize women to speak earlier. And how do we do this respectfully? Because someone might just choose, okay, it wasn't a rape. It was borderline, he went kind of rough, but it wasn't a rape. But we have to tell women, you will be abandoning any claim to victimhood if you don't talk about it to the police within a year. That is what's needed right now. We need to say the rape isn't a rape, is not a rape, if you don't talk about it to the police. Now, I understand that the justice process can be extremely slow. So it's okay, leave the statutory window to 5 years, 10 years, whatever you like. But if the woman doesn't talk about it within a year, so that the evidence is still fresh, so that we have her, in fact, it should be one day. But suppose you want to be loose about it 1 year. That way we can ensure that there's not this selection phenomenon by which it is incredible how much people are getting accused of rape right at the moment where they have political endeavors or success. It's insane. Doesn't make sense at all. So we can see what's happening here. The loser rapist. The loser rapist gets away with it. He's not even worth it. He's not even a worthy prey for the Me Too woman. So he gets away with it. No one's going to care about just getting a random guy, into police trouble who doesn't have money. But eventually, those who get money, those who get politician status, eventually money, it becomes interesting for NGOs and various female groups to be funding the victims to come out. And now the money speaks, and now the victim speaks. That's what's happening very clearly. To be amassing, to be accumulating a mountain of women like the counts that we're about to do, what's being accused toward the Tate here, to be amassing this amount of victims on two different men who independently, apparently, you have to believe this, you have to believe that they have independently engaged on independent streaks of rape. And that one or a handful of them were reported maybe 10 years ago, and that then the whole pile came to the point where they added last week a new pile of victims. That's a problem of society. But let's have a look at the arrest moment here. So it would appear, based on the interview, that Andrew Tate had chosen, we're going to force a decision. We're going to test and see if they arrest us if we go to Miami. Come over here by me. I love this guy with the golden suit. It's like, if I was to suspect anyone of something weird... I'm not accusing him of anything here. I'm just saying I don't trust the golden suit. This guy stands as an outlier here.
Back up.
Marby Dog says, I have dated 6 women long term, more than a year. All of them claim to have been assaulted in their prior lives. None of them went to the police. I just don't believe it. Oh yeah, when I was a young idealist, I believed it. When I was like, oh shit, wow. You know, my first wives, my first girlfriends, they were all telling me, oh no, I was raped, and oh no, I was attacked. Now I understand. It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's the woman interface really to empathy. They want to recruit it because they like the status of victim. I now understand it's all fucking crap. And holy shit, was I a naive young adult at first. Oh no, you got raped. Oh no, and this person beat you during sex. Man, I've heard it again and again. And yes, you know, we accumulate these series of females in our past, and you just take the probabilities of it. Like, I look at how many of my girlfriends have claimed I was raped or I was assaulted. Now, take those probabilities and just realize that you're just one of the boyfriends. She's now with another boyfriend, and she's telling him that you raped her. And what do you end up with? Well, if you have 2,000 girlfriends, you have a potential pile of 20 to 30 women who are willing to stand in a witness box and say it, say what they say to their new boyfriend, say what they say to their family. that's just what it is. It's false broadcasting. Again, we were talking about it, which is why what Clavicular did with his girlfriend is not at that level of false broadcasting. It's not false rape allegations that she did. But we have to go for the whole machine of false broadcasting. We have to go for the whole thing that these women are doing. Because I've been so often stuck with women who are doing everything in their power to make me look bad. Jill Jambon says, I like that, Doc. Never trust the golden suit. I mean, it's an easy heuristic, you know. Why would you trust the golden suit? I guess that's the right way to phrase it. Why would you trust the golden suit? Surely there's someone available who doesn't have a golden suit. I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm just kidding here, but what a spectacular thing. So the interview of Andrew Tate was basically almost a monologue in front of the extremely autistic interviewer. I'm having difficulty here even finding a moment of the interview where we see the interviewer. Maybe at the end. Oh, yes. So it's this interviewer. I love him, by the way. He has this whole extremely autistic, maybe Nordic European or whatever that is. He has this whole autistic approach to interviews, which I love. I just love because it leaves a lot of space to the guys that are speaking. And it's kind of what I did in my career as an interviewer. Carzonian says the gold suit guy is Justin Waller. He was in the Avengers pick with Fuentes, Clavicular, Tate. He is Saturn and for some reason doesn't seem super smart, but he's a nice guy. Okay, I have no idea who that guy is. Good to know. Ryan says, JF, I still have that tractor. If you remember me, lol, you never answered me in DM. I answered you. I want the tractor. I want the fucking tractor. If I remember correctly, was it a Twitter DM? Send me a DM again or send me an email. Because I remember I replied to you and I said, I want that tractor. I still want it. This guy is offering me a free tractor. Of course I'm going to buy a tractor. I'm going to take the tractor. Man. I'm gonna be just lawn mowing with my tractor. Absolutely, I'll take your tractor, bro. But in my memory, I have responded. I don't know if it didn't pass or something. So we are learning speculations. At least for now, it looks like speculation. Doesn't seem very backed. But Donald Trump will allow Andrew and Tristan Tate to be extradited to the U.S. The White House has refused to intervene despite pressure from figures in Donald Trump's inner circle. The U.S. president will not step in to block the brothers' return to the U.K. That kind of rumor or this speculation has expressed itself today on the social media in various forms. And it's very realistic, unfortunately. I think it's probably what will happen. I think it's very unlikely that you would get this arrest if it wasn't that Trump had decided to let it happen already. And to the Tates, I would say, you know, Trump is a guy who drops people under the bus a lot. He loves it. He loves doing this. He even drops his own fans under the bus. He drops his own base. So it's like, yeah, one day they would drop someone like a Tate under the bus. They would drop someone like a Fuentes under the bus. Of course. The Ape Man says, JF, do you think that you should elicit active consent on every penetrative trust? I don't think so, no. I don't think so. I've never had a problem with consent. Like, even in the kind of lies that my exes have tried across the years to stick to me, even their lies, they don't even go there. They will lie about, oh, he seemed bizarre that day. They will lie about this, but I don't think any of them has actually ever claimed even that consent was not obtained. But yeah, no, not at every trust. In fact, in general, in an established relationship, there is no need for explicit consent. I mean, the woman will make moves, will either stop you if she doesn't want sex, or she will let you have sex if she wants sex. There's no need for explicit consent generally, unless you are with a new woman, you don't know exactly how she communicates, you think she might be intimidated or whatever, then those are the situations in which you want to ask for explicit consent. But other than this, I don't see the point. Don't see the point at all. Cat's Dead says, JF, a girl told me, although, you know, there might be a point where at this point we have females constructing false scenarios so much that perhaps just getting them to recite the explicit consent, like you would have an elementary student recite something so that they can memorize it, perhaps that would be good for them. Because when females make up their lies, they have difficulties maintaining the cognitive dissonance. So if you had them say it out loud, they're going to have a great difficulty then making the lie and claiming that they didn't say it out loud. Cat's Dead says, JF, a girl told me, a girl me-tooed me in 2017 because she cheated on her boyfriend with me and got caught. My friends at the party backed my story, so nothing happened. But she did go to the cops. It's insane. It's tools of vengeance. Women don't speak from a place of truth. They don't care about the truth. They care about how they're hurt in the situation. They will do wrongs to you, and then they will hit you after it because they will accuse you of having forced them to do the wrongs. I mean, it's a fucking mess. Woman psychology is a fucking mess. Neutrinoid says, good point. Maybe we should not buy too much white food books. They will try to get JF. Oh, well, no, I don't think that my book will get me in trouble. It's such a great book. It's such a great cookbook. I don't expect trouble from it. The only people who will be triggered by white people food is people who have only seen the title. Because let me tell you, when you open this treasure of culinary knowledge, you cannot do anything but appreciate the work that was done there. It is something to live with on the everyday. And it's truly about cuisine. It's not a side book where I use cuisine as an excuse to... No. It's a book about cooking. All right, let's talk about the counts of the Andrew Tate situation, because we have to separate. So all of the events that are claimed against the Tate brothers have all happened between 2012 and 2016. So we're talking about a four-year window where they would have been in the UK, and then 10 years later, we have them arrested. Now, as Richard Spencer pointed out on Twitter, yes, some of these victims announced themselves earlier than recently. But I don't know how earlier. I don't know. So these were the basis of the initial extradition warrants issued by the Bedfordshire Police in January 2024. So the current warrant stems from a 2024 request, but there were, as Andrew Tate has pointed out in his interview, there were precedents where they had tried for many years to capture them using the local Romanian authorities. But this time, it's the first time where they are using the American authorities, although there was an attempt, and we've seen publicly what this attempt looked like. We've seen at some point Andrew Tate and his brother flew into the US, and the Florida people, the Florida governor DeSantis and the AG just made public statements about how he was not welcome here. And now we learn from the interview of Andrew Tate, the reason they were so frustrated at him is that they couldn't arrest him there because it was considered that the Romanian courts had taken judicial control of the arrest warrant, of the extradition warrant. So in justice, you cannot be attacked by two judicial processes for the same thing. That's an important principle. No double juris, whatever is the Latin term for it. So no repetition of two processes for the same thing. So you cannot have a single extradition warrant emitting from the UK, but then be subject to it being handled by a judge in Romania, and then handled by also judges in Florida. Now, that's a very subtle but important thing. Now, it could have been that the Romanian judge rejected the extradition warrant, but that's not what they did. If he had rejected it, then Tate would have been arrested perhaps many years ago, because when he flew into Florida, then they could have said, we are taking on that extradition warrant. But because the judge had control of the warrant and he was saying, I'm currently implementing that warrant, but he was playing a difficult game. He was saying, I'm currently implementing that warrant, but I'm not sending him yet to the UK. We're going to wait later. So that was the legal subtlety that has kept the Tate brothers on the public space for a few years, for maybe 2022 to now. It's the fact that an incompetent, slow judiciary process had taken over the legal route that would have been available to Florida then. It's a subtlety, but it's interesting. Now, the allegations, therefore, all stem from actions that would have happened between 2012 and 2016. Andrew Tate, 10 charges total in original. So here we have two layers of categories that I will include. We have the original charges, which are dating, and then we have the supplementary charges that have come. So just to compare, Andrew Tate, original charges, the ones that originally motivated this demand in 2024. 3 counts of rape. 4 counts of assault, occasioning actual bodily harm. 2 counts of human trafficking. And 1 count of controlling prostitution for gain. Now, look at what has been added last week for offenses allegedly between 2010 to 2017. 7 further counts of rape. So we had 3 original counts of rape. Now we have 7 more. 3 counts of arranging or facilitating trafficking for sexual exploitation. 3 counts of assault occasioning actual bodily harm. 19 charges relating to indecent images of a child or extreme pornography. Now, okay, so that is for Andrew Tate. So you can see that there were some bases for it from a longer time ago, and then there was a stack of a pileup. There was a pileup of even more charges. Tristan Tate, 11 charges total, 3 counts of rape, 6 counts of assault occasioning actual bodily harm, 2 counts of human trafficking, and then so those were the original charges, and then added last week, 1 count of sexual assault, 2 counts of rape, and 3 counts of arranging or facilitating trafficking for sexual exploitation. So let's think about all this. I don't think that these actions are good if they have been performed. I don't think that rape is good. I don't think that sexual assault is good. And certainly, I believe that sexual exploitation of women for money is immoral. However, as far as the sexual exploitation of women for money, I would point out that very often they are self-exploiting. Very often it's adult women who are wanting to make money, and they do it through, they use their boyfriend or they use their pimp as an agent to make it happen. And that's because they know they don't have the confidence, or they don't have the ability to organize the whole structure around their prostitution or around their OnlyFans pictures on the internet. So they rely on a guy. Now, the sad thing of sexual exploitation is that, yes, it's immoral. Yes, it's wrong, and I object to it. But I absolutely also object to the sole responsibilization of the male in this process, because it's always what we get. There's barely any punishment for prostitution itself. And the women are basically let to do whatever they want. So they enter in this pimping relationship with absolute legal immunity. It's amazing, because there is no other crime, by the way, there is no other crime in which your collaborators aren't equally involved in the thing. So imagine that. Remove prostitution and imagine a murder, or imagine a car theft. So, and imagine the woman says, well, I was with my boyfriend. Yeah, I kind of drove the car that we stole, but that's because he had a lot of power over me. I planted this knife in that other person's body, but I didn't really murder them. I was just executing what my boyfriend was telling me to do for the purpose of enrichment. There is no crime in the world where you can say these things and not be at least partly legally responsible for being an accessory to the crime, or even committing the crime yourself. But prostitution is a very special world in which the governments have given strict legal immunity to the females and strict systematic pursuit of the males as criminals. So the pimp is a human trafficker now. Well, if he's committed human trafficking, because we get this idea that human trafficking is like kidnapped women in cages being forced to engage in sex in some Thailand basement. That's not what people mean anymore by human trafficking. By human trafficking at this point, with this current matriarchal feminist liberal world, human trafficking literally just means being a pimp and bragging about it. It just means being the manager of the prostitutes at this point. So you are human trafficking because you are doing the commerce of their sex. But if that's the case, why don't we sue the woman for being accessory to the crime of human trafficking? We never do this. The women are always given perfect immunity. But if you're telling me that human trafficking is a crime, certainly the woman who was willfully subscribing to it, doing it, making it possible, even leading on her pimp that she could do it, certainly this woman is equally, or not more, even more responsible for that crime. But we never get this. So that's my big problem here. Human trafficking is the commerce of sex. Is the commerce of sex illegal? If so, let's put all of these prostitutes in jail. And you're going to have a big resolution. You're not going to have pimps anymore. But we're stuck in this asymmetric tension that creates forever pimps and forever hoes, which is that women can constantly entice men into believing that they can be farmed into prostitutes and that they can be pimped out. And as long as you don't punish the woman, there will be pimps showing up thinking maybe they can get away with it. that is very important. This is a base injustice to these allegations. We're not even getting into whether they're true, because I believe that when you talk about the events 15 years later, I have serious doubts about whether that many counts will be provable. But here we have again the pileup of the system. The system doesn't even know the truth. And so what do? They pile up with the idea that, well, the more it's going to be piled up, the more there's going to be justification for extradition. And then when we get them here, then maybe we can realize that, oh, this girl doesn't want to speak. This girl doesn't want to speak. This girl we were wrong about. Then the question is, what will be left after this dilution? And I'm not personally super confident that there will be anything left. Because I've seen again and again guys being, for example, you have the possession of extreme pornography or images of a child. Now, we'll get the testimony of Andrew Tate on this. So 19 counts, they say. And that's why Andrew Tate was saying they were so interested in my phone. That's because they wanted to prove that he had kept some records of something. But the problem is, once you get the testimony of Andrew Tate on this, then you're going to get another perspective. Is it her that was sending pictures? Was he encouraging her? And what was the nature of the picture? Were they voluntarily taken? Was she a minor? Because this law is weirdly phrased. It's indecent images of a child and extreme pornography. Which one was it? Was she 15 and was it qualifying as a child in the UK? Or was it extreme pornography and she was just a BDSM adult woman sending extreme pornography herself without consent from Tate? I mean, you can have women trying to get you into trouble by sending you their nudes. By the way, I never send nudes. I never even send like a piece of skin or leg. I don't send pictures, basically. But very often, women will send me their nudes. And I don't want it, ladies. I'm not interested in the nudes. I'm interested in your pussy on my bed, reproductive and inseminated. That's all I'm interested about. But yeah, you ladies aren't particularly good at photography, okay? Right now I can have a billion pictures. A billion pictures of properly photographed boobs. Don't send me your boobs, lady. Don't send me these leg pictures. Photography is an art and you don't master it. I still have trauma from what I've seen. So when the filtering comes in, the problem is already in the form of the charges, I can see a pattern that is social reinforcement. I can see that this all started with maybe one woman claiming some rape. Now, that gets 3 counts of rape on Tristan Tate. That gets 3 counts of rape on Andrew Tate. 3 counts, like, you can have 3 counts that all come from the same woman. And maybe they came from 2 or 3 women. But certainly there was this basis many years ago. So that was maybe coming from a single woman or a handful of them. Then, 7 further counts of rape for Andrew Tate last week. So this is the process of social accumulation. And feminism will try to wash this away by saying, oh, well, it's normal. It's the empowerment of the victims. They see that other women have come forward and they want to come forward themselves. But that is just a way to hide what's really happening, which is that these women were dug up. They were dug up not with the search for a crime. They were dug up for a search for a crime that Andrew Tate would have committed. Now, that's a very different police practice. Because normally, police, they have a fact. They're trying to explain that fact. Oh, this boy disappeared. Oh, this thing happened. And they need to resolve who did this thing. The UK proceeded in reverse here. they had a woman, maybe she's not trustable herself, maybe she is, and then they found the other woman, the missing pieces. They built a case of pattern, which is the great excitement of feminism, because they keep talking, oh, well, we can't prove that he did this. We can't prove that he did that. We can't prove that he did this. I'm 2% sure that he did that. But the behavioral pattern that's emerging, though, they did this to me again and again. The fucking behavioral pattern that's emerging from falsehoods. We have to have a threshold where we don't cross even a discussion of pattern if you haven't established the truth of your data acquisition process. We cannot talk of a pattern of behavior without having established whether we're even measuring behavior here. So I look at these charges. If they can prove that Andrew Tate was collecting actively indecent images of a child, that he wasn't sent to them without his consent, that she wasn't just trying to put him in trouble, that he was actually genuinely doing child porn of any kind, sure, put him in jail. As far as the other claims, did he commit rape? Well, at this point, after so many years, I believe we should have some restraint here and say, even if those rapes happened, there is a point at which we cannot allow a sword of Damocles to be hanging over all men's head, where at any point in their life, when they reach success, their past can come and hang over them. As far as rape is concerned, I believe that 1 year of a delay to reach the police would be an absolutely feasible statutory window of some kind. Statutory window on the report. You don't have to make it a statutory window that keeps the DA from doing the charges. They can take 5-6 years maybe. But as far as the report to the police, we cannot go back 15 years and do DNA tests and do actual data acquisition that would be leading to a provable claim. And here's the problem with rape claims. What's going to happen when Andrew Tate and Tristan Tate are on the stand and they say, no, that did not happen. What happened with this woman was we had sex. She wanted to have sex. She said, I love you. And then we had sex. And then I stepped up and went away. And then the second woman. No, this woman I haven't raped. No, this woman we met at this place. We had some sex. She said, hey, I enjoy being strangled a little bit. So I put my hand a little bit on her neck. And I didn't think any of it. I'm not that much into it. But she liked it and she demanded it. So I did it. My problem is, I don't know that the UK justice system can deliver that justice. I don't know that the UK justice system can say, you know what? The burden of proof is much more than he says this, she says this. That's a 50-50. We can't work with 50-50. And it doesn't matter that you're sending me 7 of them. Even if 7 of them come, and then Andrew Tate says to each, no, I didn't rape this woman. No, I didn't rape this woman. It's still just one person's words against another. And one of the dirtiest things that I know they will pull, because they started alluding to it, is that they get these women some text messages that they've sent back then to their bestie, female friends. And it's like, oh, you won't believe what just happened. I just got raped. And they will use this as evidence. And this should be barred from courts. Self-report, journals. Fuck this shit. This is not evidence. It's created evidence. It's evidence that you've intentionally put this thing in reserve. You've put this thing, this event that happened in your life where you had sex with Andrew Tate, you put it like it's a dollar, like it's money that you're putting in your little piggy bank. You made a reservation that day. That reservation was, I'm going to create a record. Again, something that we've been talking for the last hour, broadcasting. Woman, they love to broadcast chaos, trouble, and lies. So we're going to have these little messages that they've sent as kind of a rape note. Huh, I just got raped by Andrew Tate. That's really bad, but I'm not going to go see the police. Boom. Now you created a permanent record on which you can rely to convince a jury 15 years later. That's what we're about to see. And unfortunately, I believe that it's extremely likely that the jury will be convinced, but that the weaknesses that I've highlighted of this very method, and I don't even know whether they committed the rape or committed the aggression. So what are the aggressions claimed? He would have strangled one. He would have played rough at some point. And then at some point, he would have strangled one to the point of unconsciousness. What happens if I see Andrew Tate on the stand say, no, she didn't fall unconscious that day. No, she's saying this, but I absolutely remember the whole series of events. She wanted me to touch her neck. I did it, didn't squeeze strong. There is no way she fell unconscious. How does a man get justice? Because I can easily see, if you were to have $1 million, you could easily get maybe 15 rape claims against me. $1 million. It's cheap. There's a lot of people with $1 million to spend. You can easily get 15 women to go to a trial and say JF raped me and give a credible telling of the events. And it's like, at what point do I get the presumption of innocence and the burden of proof on them? At what point do I get the system to say, I'm not going to work with 15-year-old evidence. I'm not going to work with socially reinforced piling. I'm not going to work with mobs. I'm not going to work with NGOs coaching women on what they have to say. I'm not going to work on patterns of behavior, because I know that patterns of behavior are actually patterns of ways in which females coordinate and synchronize on what they're about to say, so that the whole story looks like very Lauren Sutton, says DK Shadow. And yes, that is something I had forgotten, but we're back to Lauren Sutton published this book. Ah, here's my experience. And what do you have? You have an entertainment phenomenon. You have a feedback loop. Now we have 7 more counts of rape. Possibly some of these women have been inspired by Lauren Sutton. All in all, I have no clue whether these guys committed rapes. I think that in the domain of pimping and webcamming, it's not particularly surprising to have sexual tension. These guys were probably acting like big shots, because that's what you have to do to attract, pimping victims or pimping prostitutes. That's probably more the right term, because I don't see a woman engaging in the exploitation of her own sex as a victim. I don't know exactly whether they committed these crimes, and I do not care. I do not care. I believe that we should not have social processes of this kind pace the rhythm of justice. Because the fact is, you know and I know, that if suppose the Tates have committed each of these crimes, but suppose that they then became nameless Romanian homeless guys. There is no way these cases happen. So down the line, what we have is a female plantation. That's what we live on. We have a female plantation they are farming claims of rape against us, sending false signals to everyone around them. They are creating records. Ah, I got raped by Tate. They are intentionally hiding those records to keep the police from investigating at the time where it could have been done. And they accumulate this information like it's money in a piggy bank. And they will only break the piggy bank when you are powerful. And down the line, because a homeless, valueless Andrew Tate would not have been extradited, would not have had accumulated this pylon onto him, would not have even raised any concern, could have committed 10 times the rape. If he got away with it, went to Romania and became homeless there, he would have never been extradited. Therefore, I believe that there is an injustice here being done, even if they committed the rapes. It's the injustice of the selective enforcement of law by a pile of women. And that is one of the most dangerous things hanging onto our nations.